Oh, good morning. And obviously, it's appropriate to start with the day with more thanks to the organizers. It's always a privilege and plainly great fun to be here at KATP. So, because it's always a privilege and great fun, and I was invited to speak at this conference, I have been thinking rather feverishly, what should I present, actually, because we are not really doing stuff directly related to origin of multicellularity and that sort of thing, which was my understanding of the main theme of the conference. But since I wanted to accept the invitation anyway, some ideas came up. It turned out, actually, I should be grateful to the organizers of this conference for the whole train of thinking that is new to me, and that I'll try to present this morning. What follows in the next half hour will be an entirely soft biological talk with not a single equation and very few simple plots. The whole mathematical part will come in the afternoon when Alex Lobkowski, my member of my group and my collaborator, in much of these analysis, will give his talk. The last of the day, I believe. So, the subject that I want to address today is coevolution of viruses and systems for antivirus defense in prokaryotes and various consequences of the arms race between viruses and defense systems. It's appropriate, I think, to start here. I'm not entirely sure how or much or to what extent all the people in the room realize it, but the plain fact that has become clear from environmental genomics and virology and metagenomics in the last few years is that viruses are the dominant entities in the biosphere. Roughly speaking, if you take a sample out of the ocean water there or from some soil in the laguna in the middle of the campus, you will get 1 to 2 orders more virus particles than you get cells. Ditto for the genetic diversity of viruses. Viruses actually represent the main reservoir of genetic diversity in this biosphere. Accordingly, I think it's completely obvious that the virus horse arms race is a defining factor in the evolution of both viruses and their cellular hosts. At face value, when you think about arms races, you obviously, well, recall the Cold War anyhow. You obviously think about antagonism and fight. Yet, as we shall see, I believe, it can also promote cooperation between different entities at multiple levels. So that this, I'll now give you sorry about that. Never mind. I'll give you my idea of the classification of the defense systems in prokaryotes that, however, I believe might be also the general outline of the classification of all kinds of antivirus defense systems. So if you want a dichotomy, if you want a binary split here, I think it makes sense to divide these defense systems into those that execute active immune responses in order to destroy the enemy, so to speak, that is the virus, and those that do something different in response to the viral invasion, namely putting the cell into dormancy or ultimately killing the cell, which leads to interesting consequences in terms of cooperation, or upon which I'll touch closer to the end of this talk. When you come to the immunity system, again, there is a split between innate immunity and adaptive immunity. Innate immunity is basically intrinsic property of the host, which destroys all invaders without fine distinction between, with respect to their identity, whereas adaptive immunity is high. I'll give the examples of how each of these principles works in a moment, so I'm not giving you the details now, just the general scheme. And the adaptive immunity is specific towards a particular invader. And this is exemplified by the CRISPR system in prokaryotes, about which many have heard, I'm sure, and which was actually historically what sparked our some discoveries in this area, sparked our interest in this whole field. On the contrary, the cell suicide dormancy systems react to the to an invasion by inactivating an essential cellular system, typically the translation system, whereby, depending on the various features of the signal that is received, or perhaps even stochastically, the cell either goes into dormancy, into a resting state, where it sort of waits out the infection, or simply dies. So that's the general classification. And now we shall talk a little about how each of these systems work and what is the genomic organization of the respective loss. And in each case, I'll try to think out loud about the way these defense systems interplay between selfishness and cooperation, so to speak. So innate immunity, restriction modification, this is very well known to everyone who has ever done any molecular biology, and that's straightforward defense and basically selfish behavior. What happens is that the system consists of these two components. This is actually a very, very general feature that we will see throughout this talk, the presence of two distinct components in these defense systems. One of these protects the host, modifies the self DNA, whereby it becomes insensitive to the action of the restriction component, the endo nucleus, whereas when the alien DNA gets into cell, it's destroyed, it's not modified. If it is not modified, it is destroyed by the restriction component. I will define this as selfish cooperation. Basically, you, if you are the cell, defend yourself. But by defending yourself, you create the healthy environment. You prevent the virus from being released and infecting others. Interestingly enough, until recently, this was basically the classic restriction modification, was considered basically the only form of innate immunity, or only known form of innate immunity in prokaryotes. But that's not the case anymore. There are other interesting systems. I just mentioned them briefly. The most well-characterized ones is the phosphorylation of the DNA backbone, which functions in a manner very similar to restriction modification, except it's the backbone of DNA molecule that is modified in this reaction that has never been known until now, that it's not only the base, but also the phosphate group or the backbone that can be modified. But this does happen, and does happen broadly in different prokaryotes. And I would like to start emphasizing here, we will see that throughout this talk, that these systems tend to be encoded in highly complex, so to speak, messy, and highly polymorphic genomic loci that include many genes encoding various kinds of proteins, beyond the core activities that I just mentioned, beyond the modification restriction in case of these innate immunity systems. What are many of those genes? We shall talk about this. Very recently, it has also been shown that there are systems that may be classified as innate immunity, but that function at a very, very different principle. that may be denoted reverse restriction modification. Because as you recall, in the traditional restriction modification system, it's the host genome, the host DNA, that is what is the self DNA that is modified. Now, this system does a very remarkable thing. It actually modifies not the self DNA, but the invading viral DNA. Whereby that invading viral DNA becomes susceptible to the restriction component of this system. Typically, this is not enough, kinetically not enough to save this particular cell. But what happened is that the virus that is released cannot infect surrounding cells in the same community, whereby well, I may denote this following David Van Dyke's talk yesterday, survival altruism. You cannot defend yourself. You die accordingly, but before you do everything to protect your kin. And again, we see the same kind of story. I just illustrate this quickly, these complex genomic loci that contain many genes with diverse predicted activities, indicating that complex stuff is going on. All right, so much about the innate immunity systems, adaptive immunity system, the CRISPR-Cas system that made quite a splash in the literature over the last several years. CRISPR comes after clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromics repeats, and Cas after CRISPR-associated proteins. And what these systems do is truly remarkable. It's something that it's a novel principle of defense, I will submit, and even, if you will, sort of a novel principle of heredity. More or less Lamarckian inheritance incarnate. Because what these systems do, briefly, they recognize a particular motif, or certain proteins that are constituents of these systems, recognize a particular motif in invading viral DNA, cut out a piece of, a relatively short piece of 40 nucleotides or so, of that viral or plasmid DNA, and which is denoted protospacer, and integrate that protospacer into the battery of these CRISPR repeats, between two direct repeats, whereby it becomes something known as spacer. Then, so what happens is that the piece of enemies, so to speak, genetic information, viral genetic information, becomes integrated into the host genome. Once it becomes integrated, it is the CRISPR locus is transcribed, the transcript is processed, and in a manner that will resemble to everyone the mechanism of eukaryotic RNA interference, this small piece of RNA that corresponds to the spacer, and that is the piece that is homologous to the virus genome, is used as by a specific enzymatic complex as a guide RNA to cleave the cognate viral or plasmid genome, and accordingly inactivated. The efficiency of protection is extremely high. If you have even a single spacer like this in a bacterial genome, it, roughly speaking, becomes 100,000 times more resistant to the viral infection than the wild type. The CRISPR research has become very active in the last few years, and the molecular complexes involved in this process have been characterized in great detail. I'm just showing you the most prominent of these, so the so-called cascade complex that holds this guide RNA and is responsible both for processing and for the destruction of the viral genome. if I told you that the loci that encoded the innate immunity systems in the prokaryote genomes were complicated, that's nothing compared to CRISPR. The CRISPR loci show enormous complexity and enormous variability of the genomic organization of the repeats themselves and the associated genes. The very tedious effort, we managed to produce some classification into three distinct types and about 10 subtypes, each of which is characterized by a particular signature. Gene, this is not my subject today, but I thought I must mention this because this is all excitement in the last few weeks. A series of papers appeared in Nature Biotechnology and some other journals that show that highlight of certain type of CRISPR-Cas systems as a new universal genome manipulation tool. Because if you think of that, the CRISPR system is actually universal restriction enzyme. Basically, you may cut the genome wherever you like using the CRISPR guide RNA. It's a fascinating subject, but not my subject right now. So what I want to proceed is the idea that behind all this complexity, there is also a remarkable unity and simplicity in the sense that the entire system is basically centered around different incarnations of one protein domain, so-called RNA recognition motif, a very basic domain that you also find, for instance, in the majority of DNA polymerases and reverse transcriptases. By doing all this comparative genomics and classifying the CRISPR systems, we manage to come up with what I believe is the parsimonious evolutionary scenario for the whole system, and I will not go into very much details, but here is what I want to emphasize. It seems like at some stage in evolution that the CRISPR system has been assembled from two distinct components, one of which is what I may call the execution module, this cascade complex that is responsible for CRISPR transcript processing and for cleavage of viral DNA, but not for the integration of pieces of viral genomes into the CRISPR cassette. And second, what may be denoted the information module. It consists of just these two genes, Cas1 and Cas2, and these are the only two universal Cas genes present in all versions of CRISPR Cas systems. And what I want to impress on you right now is that this pair of genes that almost always come together strikingly resembles in its organization toxin antitoxin systems that is responsible for programmed cell death in prokaryotes. We'll come back to that in a moment. Interestingly enough, viruses have evolved their own systems of counter defense against CRISPRs. This is the only well-characterized adaptive immunity systems in eukaryotes for now, but comparative genomics and protein analysis strongly suggest that there are other adaptive immunity systems in prokaryotes, in particular a very interesting one which centered around the prokaryotic homologs of eukaryotic organelles, the main proteins of RNA interference. These proteins are strikingly, typically encoded within genomic islands containing other defense genes. And the prediction for which now there are first experimental confirmations is that it works also using a guide RNA or DNA to cleave foreign genomes. All right, these are the immunity systems. The dormancy suicide systems in prokaryotes. What strikes me most is the endless variation on the unifying toxin antitoxin theme. So the theme is this. There are these two proteins that interact with each other. One of which is a toxin protein which typically destroys an essential cellular component, such as mRNA, indiscriminately all mRNA associated with ribosomes, or tRNA, an essential component typically that of a translation system, although there are other versions. And the unstable antitoxin, which most often is protein, but maybe also RNA, that binds and reversibly inactivates the toxin. As soon as the production of these proteins ceases, the antitoxin is destroyed quite quickly, and the toxin is unleashed. Accordingly, the toxin-antitoxin systems are addictive, selfish elements. Also, and that's most important for our subject today, the toxin can be specifically destroyed in response to stress stimuli, in particular infection. These toxin-antitoxin systems show this kind of amazing variation, which can be conveniently represented in the form of this kind of network, whereby different toxins are combined with different antitoxins. And some of these toxins, in particular toxin proteins, are remarkable hubs of this network that can be combined with a great variety of antitoxins. These systems possess distinct properties, come as these pairs of of genes encoding proteins with particular domain combinations that allow rather successful prediction of new ones. All right. This is the introduction to these defense systems in prokaryotes. And now about a little comparative genomics of these defense systems and the main subject, the interaction cooperation between different types of defense systems and implication for cell cooperation. If we build the distribution of defense, of different kinds of defense systems in bacterial and archaeal genomes, and of the whole compilation of these systems, it's very remarkable. The abundance varies by at least two orders of magnitude of genomes that are practically devoid of these systems to those that are chock full of them. Just illustrating this here with two large bacterial genomes, one of which contains, just visually, you can see the huge number of various defense systems. The other has practically none. They show different scaling with genome size, with practically no dependence for CRISPR systems, and the superlinear dependence for toxins, antitoxins. Apparently, the larger, more complex the genome becomes, the greater the need for going into dormancy or even committing suicide. By principal component analysis, you can identify four distinct clusters of organisms with regard to the distribution of these defense systems that seem to correspond to preference for different combinations of these systems, different defense strategies. And these strategies are very unevenly distributed among different prokaryotic phyla. In prokaryotic genomes, defense systems show statistically significant clustering into what we denoted defense islands. And there are highly significant trends for clustering of all of these different systems within the same locus, with the conspicuous exception for the CRISPR systems. But we will touch upon this exception just in a second. So the key point that I want to make here is that when we look into the details of these genomic islands, it turns out that almost all genomic loci for immune systems also include tightly spaced and apparently co-regulated suicides, dormancy proteins, toxins, toxins, and in some cases also antitoxins. Very remarkably, the CRISPR-Cas system actually encompasses a built-in toxin, which is none other than the Cas2 protein, which is an essential component of the essential and ubiquitous component of all of CRISPR-Cas systems. But turns out, through both the sequence and structural analysis of this protein and direct experiments, is that this is an RNA interferase, an mRNA cleaving RNAs of a particular family. The corollary from this finding seems to be that the toxin activity might be integral, essential for the CRISPR-Cas function. We still don't know what is the antitoxin, but the natural suspicion is, or if you do the prediction, that this is the Cas1 protein itself, the other essential component of the CRISPR-Cas system. So what I want to introduce now is the immunity persistence and suicide coupling hypothesis. I'm just reminding you about this classification of defense systems into immunity and suicide. Dormancy, suicide. So there are two branches, if you will, of this scenario, of this hypothesis. Scenario one, dormancy first, buy time, so to speak, for immunity to kick off. Our prediction that remains to be tested experimentally is that this is what the Cas2 protein does in the CRISPR-Cas system. That is, then you as a cell are infected and beginning to be overwhelmed by virus infection. You destroy, you inactivate an essential system in the cell and send yourself into dormancy, which is a very low activity state, in which, however, again, that's a prediction, that's a speculation. There is enough activity for spacers to be integrated into the CRISPR-Cas locus, for instance, and more generally for the immunity to kick in. If that happens, the virus then may be cleared and the cell may come back to life. The second, more grim scenario is that when the immunity fails completely, the cell kills itself in the altruistic manner, in order, so to speak anthropomorphically, to protect its skin. A last piece of data and some conclusion. So these proteins that are involved in defense systems are extremely variable, which is tend to evolve extremely fast while often conserving the structure. This is what you expect of all components of immunity defense systems. So recently, we performed a rather exhaustive investigation of this computational investigation of this domain that turns out to be the most common toxin and shows also many functions beyond that type of activity. It has been discovered in a modest manner years ago, but there are many structures. This is an alpha helical structure, which is conducive to particularly fast evolution. But mostly I wanted to show this. There is just mind-boggling, remarkable diversity of domain architectures that we discover in proteins containing this domain. And this one highlighted here is the most common toxin and antitoxin systems, of which many archaeal genomes are just chock full. But there are also a variety of other functions, combinations of domains, indicative of various kinds of functions. It's a hub of a variety of functional networks. And to conclude on this, in a remarkable manner, we find this domain not only present in a great variety of toxin and antitoxin systems in eukaryotes, in prokaryotes, in particular associated with immunity systems, as I emphasized a minute ago, but also in eukaryotic defense proteins, well known, such as RNAs L involved in interferon response, as well as in eukaryotic proteins as involved in essential functions, such as ribosomal RNA precursor, or quality control of RNA transcripts, and others. So this kind of domain could be central, I believe, to the origin of cell-cell cooperation by altruistic cell death. All right. Several conclusions. Basically, I do not need to talk much about this slide. You have seen it all already. The main impression that I want to make now is the enormous unexpected complexity of these defense systems in supposedly the simplest forms of cellular life. I think it's fair to say that they are only scratching the surface of that complexity. Now, I want to go back to what I more or less started with and present this idea of the hierarchy of cooperation altruism levels. So we start with the classic defense, more or less selfish cooperation. Protect yourself and others as a collateral. Then we go to a higher level of altruism. Let's say reverse restriction modification, going down but trying to take the enemy with you. Dormancy, temporarily shut yourself down, give yourself a chance, and at the same time avoid hurting others. And finally, the ultimate sacrifice, programmed cell death. Kill yourself using a special weapon to avoid hurting others. So the level of altruistic behavior grows here with the increasing level of stress or distress. So basically, I believe, viruses promote intercellular cooperation, and in a certain sense, you may even talk about cooperation between evolving viruses and cells. I guess everyone remembers this saying by Ben Franklin. So, the people, this is my entire group in front of the building in Bethesda. Most of the comparative genomics was done by Kira Makarova, the great assistance of Yuri Wolf. Again, the mathematical part was done primarily by Alex Lobkowski, who described this in the last talk today. We also enjoy wonderful collaboration with pretty much the entire community of the people who study CRISPRs. And thank you very much. I'll be happy to answer questions in the KATP tradition.
Yes.
Moreover, it's not just a speculation. It has been shown experimentally that on some occasions, on some rare occasions, the CRISPR cassettes do incorporate self spacers. We do not know exactly what is the mechanism for self non-self discrimination here, but it must exist. I mentioned the PAM motif, protospacer associated motif. The thing is, however, that the specificity of this motif is very low, and it's so low, it's just 2-3 base pairs. So it's even not really possible to show that this is avoided in the host genomes. Why is it so? It's an enigma, but I think the results of the mathematical modeling that we are doing start to clarify this. There is an advantage, without preempting Alex's talk, there may be an advantage in doing so. But there should be some other mechanism of self-non-self discrimination, and it's, I think, one of the greatest mysteries in the whole story. We don't know yet what it is.
Actually, a little bit related question. You went rather fast describing the cascade system and Argonaut, and so you have a hypothesis about evolution of CRISPR there. with cascade combined with toxin antitoxin two genes, if I understand correctly. So does cascade system have some other function outside CRISPR?
Not to my knowledge at all. Apparently this is completely dedicated. Interestingly enough, the information model, the Cas1 protein, does seem to have other functions. The Cas1 knockouts have various DNA repair phenotypes, but not the cascade. As far as I know, that's a dedicated weaponry for the CRISPR-Cas system.
And you had the slide on Argonaut, so that's yet another unrelated system. There's no similarity with Argonaut cascade.
No, that is correct. There is no relation. Actually, these are interesting questions. I will emphasize something else that is quite interesting to me. So there is a whole league, so to speak, of these Cas proteins, some 30 protein families. And essentially, none of these proteins have any close homologs, any clear orthologs in eukaryotes. That is very strange. I have some speculations about that, but I may talk about that offline. It's quite the contrary with the Argonaut. That actually seems to be the evolutionary precursor, the ancestor, or the eukaryotic, or the core of the eukaryotic RNAi system. We know very little about what it does in prokaryotes, but we already know that it is associated with some small RNAs and in all likelihood involved in defense.
I have a question related to the Argonauts. So in eukaryotes, as you know, the Argonauts have split into many families that play distinct roles in different cell types. Are there also multiple classes of Argonauts within prokaryotes that can be distinguished that have different functions?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Yeah, the diversity is less, but it exists. Interestingly enough, there are at least two major, I had a tree, but I had to throw it out. Too many slides. So there are two basic varieties, one of which is predicted to be an active endonuclease. In the other one, the key catalytic residues that are required for endonucleolytic activity have been lost, but interestingly enough, it's encoded in the same neighborhood with other nucleases that are implicated in defense functions, restriction enzyme fold nucleases. So apparently, similarly to some of the eukaryotic Argonauts, that separation between the active variety and inactive variety that most likely plays a structural role in defense complexes has occurred already in prokaryotes, and in particular in archaea. The greater diversity of these proteins is seen in archaea. Whether or not any of them perform non-defense functions in prokaryotes is a very interesting question to which I don't have an answer.
Maybe I'll ask a question. So I'm really interested in your hierarchical hypothesis. I was wondering, specifically about the dormancy one. So with the hierarchical hypothesis, I would expect to see a hierarchical regulation as well. So when you're dormant, it turns everything off except the Cas system?
That's a very good question, and this remains to be investigated. Dormancy does not turn everything on. Despite the shut-off of translation is not 100%, and at some level, processes like DNA repair continue to occur, and given a chance, cells come back quickly. So some, roughly speaking, 1% level of biochemical activity is happening wherever or not there is some kind of specific upregulation of CRISPR. It's a great question, and I hope these ideas will stimulate the experimental study.
Okay, thank you.